I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, we've warned of Democrats' unchecked power in Olympia. Well, they just changed a 132-year-old rule so that they didn't have to listen to any dissent. Plus, we knew an immigration showdown was imminent between the two Washingtons. Well, it sounds like it's just heating up. And we hear the story of a pardoned J6er from Washington State. That and more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. Hello, hello, and welcome to Undivided on this Monday. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving Common Sense a comeback. We've got some breaking news happening right now. In fact, we're going to try to turn around some sound really quickly from Governor Bob Ferguson. We'll do our best. Not a breaking news show, but, you know, if news is breaking during the show, we're going to try. So we know in one of the things that I have said leading up to, you know, Trump's inauguration, Bob Ferguson becoming the new governor, is that we were going to see in Washington State probably be ground zero for blue state pushback against the Trump administration's immigration policies. And we saw that play out last week. I mean, day two of Donald Trump, like his first full day in office, our new attorney general, Nick Brown, you'll recall, sued over the executive order to end birthright citizenship. They were successful in getting a halt to that. And this is not a surprise. I mean, Bob Ferguson was the attorney general for 12 years. And during the first Trump administration, he sued him like dozens, was it like 100 times or something? I mean, that's what he spent his entire time doing. And you have someone who's very similar to Bob Ferguson ideologically now in the attorney general's office, and Bob Ferguson is the governor. So you have Donald Trump, who has made immigration and cracking down at what's happening at our southern border his number one priority, and a governor in Washington state, in a sanctuary state, who has already sued Trump before on immigration, and who loves the limelight in that regard. So you're going to see a lot of clashes, and it's already happening. So a few things. Just a few minutes ago, and actually as we speak, I believe Governor Bob Ferguson is talking about what he's going to do. You see these immigration raids happening across the country. So he has put out an immigration order, or an executive order, protecting immigrant families and responding to family separation. So he basically is talking in this executive order, Washington is an inclusive and welcoming state. Washington families of all backgrounds and cultures contribute greatly to our state. Washington values the bonds within families and between family members, which is interesting because do you really? I don't think so. It says, now therefore, I, Bob Ferguson, governor of the state of Washington, by the power vested in me, do hereby order and direct the Department of Children, Youth, and Families to immediately form a family separation rapid response team to explore recommended policies and actions for mitigating, to the extent possible, the harm, trauma, and other lasting effects on children who experience family separation through the deportation or detention of their parents or primary caregivers. Says that they're going to hold its first meeting no later than February 14th. DCYF shall consult with the governor's office on promptly identifying the members of the rapid response team, which shall consist of professionals from within DCYF, at least one representative from each, the Washington State Patrol, the Office of Refugee and Immigrant Assistance, and the governor's office, and other state agencies as appropriate. So he has a press conference today. He's laying out what they're going to do. And remember, he talked to Jonathan Cho. Jonathan Cho had kind of cornered him after an event where they were talking about immigration issues. And he said at the time, his answer sounded very reasonable. He said, look, federal law and the powers of the presidency give Donald Trump the ability to go into our state and to carry out deportations and ICE raids. And he said they're going to allow that where it's lawful, and they're going to intervene if it takes a lawsuit, so be it, where it's not lawful. Now, I don't know if I buy that. I mean, the answer that he gave Jonathan Cho, which is, hey, if they're carrying out lawful federal immigration actions, we're not going to do anything. But if they're, you know, crossing the line and carrying out things in our jurisdiction that are a problem, we're going to do something, except, and you have this cut for me now. So Bob Ferguson, Governor Bob Ferguson, just said this.
We're also mindful that presidents have a lot of authority. They do. And they can do things that are lawful that we strongly oppose and that go against our values. We also need to prepare for those events as well to minimize the impacts of Washingtonians when a president does something that may be lawful but goes against our values.
He's doing something that's lawful, but it goes against their values. And so how is he going to intervene when it goes against Washington values? Are they going to make it more difficult for ICE to do their jobs? we already see state agencies like the Office of Superintendent of Public Instruction that's sending out these guidelines, essentially, in my eyes, as a blueprint for obstructing ICE. You know, not answering questions. Here's this. So is our state, through this task force, going to, as an example, be using taxpayer funds to provide legal services to families to help them avoid deportation by ICE? And I'll say, as all of this is going on, you know, for any leaders who want to speak out about what Trump is doing, these raids that have been happening in cities like Chicago, down in Texas, and yes, in Seattle, have been targeting thus far violent criminal aliens. For instance, there were two arrests and targets for deportation that happened in Seattle that the White House notified the public about. The first one, Kevin Adith Torres Velasquez. He's a Honduran national who was found with cocaine, fentanyl, and a firearm. He was arrested by ICE in Seattle over the weekend. A second one, like, does anybody have a problem with this guy? Edgar De La Cruz Manzo, 34, a national of Mexico. He was arrested by ICE because he's been convicted of rape of a child. So what I would like to see Bob Ferguson and other blue state governors and leaders do is celebrate that stuff. Surely you're all okay with that. Surely you're okay with ICE going around. They did it all over the country. And rounding up people who've committed crimes in the United States, sometimes violent crimes, crimes against children. But instead, it's like this automatic response that it's like, orange man bad, he's going to hurt people and families. And we need to protect these families. Well, they do virtually nothing to protect our communities from people like this guy. Like these two individuals. I mean, the one with fentanyl, who was caught with fentanyl, the Honduras national, fentanyl is killing people on our streets every single day. So why doesn't Bob Ferguson get up at a press conference and instead of talking about, you know, Donald Trump's going to do things that aren't in line with our values? This isn't in line with your values? That would be weird if that's not in line with your values to scoop up sex offenders and child predators and people who are trafficking fentanyl who don't belong here. So instead of having that press conference, I'd like him to have a press conference and say, we stand ready to assist the Trump administration with getting people like Torres Velasquez and De La Cruz out of our state so they can stop preying on and victimizing our citizens. And we're going to do that by easing some of our sanctuary state policies. Because sanctuary state policies, whether you're an illegal immigrant who, let's say you were brought here with your parents, your parents are illegal immigrants, they brought you here with them, and you're just a kid who's here illegally because your parents decided to cross the border. Our sanctuary state policies treat that child no different than they treat Edgar De La Cruz, who was convicted of rape of a child. Our sanctuary policies are designed to protect and shield immigration status, regardless of whether you're just a kid trying to go to school or if you're a child predator. And that's the problem with sanctuary state policies, is if you've got someone who's booked in, who's arrested for child porn or whatever it is, and they're in jail, they're never going to communicate with ICE. Prosecutors aren't going to communicate with ICE. They're not going to inquire about their immigration status throughout the entire system. And then when their sentence is up, they get kicked loose, no call to ICE whatsoever. So if Bob Ferguson is A, serious about public safety, which he said he was on the campaign trail, he should be providing any assistance that the State Patrol can offer, can bring to bear. Hell, the Washington National Guard, to go out there and round up dangerous, criminal, illegal aliens. And in doing so, if he were to actually help the Trump administration target the people who need to be targeted, then you're going to have less collateral damage. As opposed to if they're going out there flailing, trying to track down these families, and yeah, there's going to be collateral roundups of kids, of adults who maybe haven't committed any other criminal law violations. So they could help them and actually reduce some of the harm and fear that he says that the state is concerned about. So that's the very first thing. How can we cooperate? What can we do? And then he should be praising specific actions from the Trump administration that are targeting criminals. But look, if Washington State, it's this whole thing, it goes back to something I said on the show last week. Attorney General Nick Brown put out a statement about their lawsuit about birthright citizenship, saying he's going to stand up for our values, which again, that's not necessarily our values. There's a lot of us who have a problem with the immigration system and the way that birthright citizenship has been abused. So Bob Ferguson, again, he's a governor for 60% of the state. our values. So they're going to use taxpayer funds, because taxpayers put them in office, you know, at least 60% of them, to provide all these services to immigrant families who are here illegally. And yeah, you know, with family separation, Tom Holman, who's Trump's, you know, chief guy for all the ICE deportation efforts that are underway, remember he was asked on the news, like, is there any way to avoid family separation? And he said, yeah, we'll deport families together. And so that's a choice, right? If you've brought your entire family here illegally, you know, and they come in, it's like, okay, the only person who'd stand in the way, who'd cause family separation, is an illegal alien parent who decides to leave their kid behind, which honestly is just kind of messed up. So we see this showdown. We see what it's going to become. One of the things I'll say, the Department of Justice put out something, and I don't know the extent to which this would apply to Bob Ferguson. He continues to say, we're only going to go after things that Donald Trump is overreaching on. But the Department of Justice essentially says that they might pursue criminal action, legal action, against elected officials across the country whose policies, whose actions are serving to harbor illegal aliens. They put out this memorandum. It says, the Supremacy Clause and other authorities require state and local actors to comply with the executive branch's immigration enforcement initiatives. Federal law prohibits state and local actors from resisting, obstructing, and otherwise failing to comply with lawful immigration-related commands and requests. The U.S. Attorney's Offices and litigating components of the Department of Justice shall investigate incidents involving any such misconduct for potential prosecution. So look, I don't know how bad this Washington versus Washington thing is going to get. We're already, of all the blue states, on the forefront of pushing back against Donald Trump's immigration policies. We sued on day two of his administration. And again, I already said, I think that that lawsuit is probably going to prevail on the merits. I don't think that Donald Trump can just, like, do away with the 14th Amendment on his own. But at the same time, it shows the posture that Washington state is setting, that they're going to fight Donald Trump tooth and nail. And instead of having a press conference praising Donald Trump and his administration for getting child predators off the streets of Washington, he wants to talk about how, oh, this isn't in line with our values and we're going to protect people from the pain that they might endure as a result of this. Like, they don't care about public safety at all. They have no nuance. They can't look at this and it's black and white to them. Like, either you're pro-immigrant or you're a hateful bigot. It's like, no, we're all pro-immigrant, pro-legal immigrant. And I'm sorry, if you have kids who are caught up in this mess, that's not Donald Trump's fault. That's not my fault. That's not Nicole's fault. That's not the fault of people who support what Donald Trump is doing. That's the fault of whoever brought that child here illegally. And they knew that that was a risk the second they crossed illegally into the United States. So the only people who are to blame for the fear and pain and uncertainty that this is going to cause are illegal immigrants themselves. So buckle up, buttercups, because I think this is going to be a wild, wild few months, because Donald Trump is, I mean, he's from the golf course, like, dictating deportation flights. And he's, we're going to talk about that later in National. Like, it is very clear that this is priority number one and they're not going to waste any time. And I don't know what the consequences are going to be for Washington state and other sanctuary states if they get in his way, because he means business this time around. All right. I want to talk about, really, I've got a few legislative bills that kind of over the weekend started to come into focus. And I mean, Democrats in Olympia are moving towards authoritarianism. Just, I mean, they're already kind of there. We've talked over and over and over about the danger of one party rule, the danger of one party having control of the House, the Senate, and the governor's office, moving very, very close to supermajorities where they can do essentially anything they want. So, I mean, at this point, like, look, Democrats in Olympia can do anything they want. I don't know what is going to stand in their way from pushing bad policy. It has to be an overwhelming pushback from the public, because we've seen that even initiatives don't really stand in their way. They'll just fight them in court. They'll find ways to undo them. So it's like, unless there's some groundswell of anger over some of these things I'm going to talk about that are very deserving of a groundswell of anger, I don't know what will derail them. So I want to talk about a bill we've talked about before, but it's now moving along through committees, et cetera. House Bill 1125, one of the worst bills this session as it relates to public safety. So House Bill 1125 would expand judicial discretion, which is just about the dumbest thing that we could do in Washington state right now. Why? Well, because we have a lot of activist judges who already have discretion. and who use it all the time to let people out without posting any bail, to give a slap on the wrist to violent criminals. But now they want to give judges discretion to go back and change the sentences of violent criminal offenders who are sitting in prison right now. Remember, this is the one I say would mean no finality for victims. Your family member could get shot. You think there is a trial and a sentencing and that the person's in prison for 25 years. And then you find out one day that an activist judge decided that that sentence that was handed down to them all those years ago no longer serves the interest of justice. This is from the bill. It says the legislature intends to authorize sentencing courts to review lengthy sentences upon a showing that a person's original sentence no longer serves the interest of justice. Give you one guess who this bill is from. One guess. Nicole, you haven't seen this clip yet. You got a guess? Oh, you have. Oh, well, she already knows then.
Yeah, I have.
It is from the lawmaker who's, I think, the only one to have actually served time in prison, who now spends all of her time as a lawmaker advocating for criminals, Tara Simmons.
Now we have people who are old in our prisons, and we're getting sued all the time because they're not set up to be nursing homes, and because not ever having an out date and getting 60 years when you're 20 really gives you no incentive to rehabilitate. You're going to be there forever.
Well, if you got 60 years when you were 20, you probably did something pretty bad. And yeah, that was the point. Like, hey, they're going to be in prison for 60 years because of the crime they committed. And if they have no interior incentive to rehabilitate because they're going to be there forever, why is that our problem? If they would like to just sit in prison and not ever, over the course of 60 years, try to become a better person, try to find a way to be productive behind bars, why is that our problem? They need their sentence changed in order to be productive? And you want to give really any judge that someone might petition across the state of Washington, and you're going to, of course, petition the activist judges in the activist jurisdictions. You want to give them the power to go back in time and decide, you know, because the judge at the time didn't know best, to decide, hey, you know, I don't think that sentence serves the interest of justice anymore. Now, as this just drives me nuts, as with most hearings on bills that are controversial, what do they do? Well, in the House Public Safety Committee, chaired by Representative Roger Goodman, they like to leave the testimony on those bills to the very end of the allotted time for the committee. Because they get so many people who sign in to testify, and if it's controversial, they want to hear from as few people as possible. And that's what they did in this case. Pushed it to the end, so we're going to run out of time to hear about the people who want to talk about our dumb ideas, our dangerous ideas. Except, of course, they want to make time, and they always make time for the individuals who they want to hear from before anyone else. For example, here's the last person who got a chance to testify, Roger Goodman introducing them.
The final person to testify that we only have time for is Judge Veronica Galvan.
Oh, the final person who we only have time for, the most notorious judge in the entire state of Washington, Judge Veronica Galvan. I'll remind you in a moment of all her past indiscretions. Here is the testimony that she offered the committee on why judges like herself, again, the most soft on crime, pro-criminal judge in the state, should have discretion to overturn sentences that have already been handed down. Here she is.
Good morning. I'm here as co-chair of the Minority and Justice Commission. The Minority and Justice Commission supports second look policies because we know that past policies have had disparate and disproportionate impacts on certain communities in Washington state. There was a time when we didn't have guidelines that were ministerial in nature that allowed these sentences to proliferate in the way that we do. Everybody talks about the law, but this law is not that old. It has been within certainly my lifetime. And we know now what this has wrought. We know better, and we are obligated to do better. I commend to you the actual data on these sentences. Please read Catherine Beckett, Drs. Catherine Beckett and Heather Evans, who did a study understanding the proliferation of long life sentences. And the numbers don't lie. Previous resentencing opportunities, such as those after the Miller fix, have resulted in a minuscule rate of recidivism. Life and long sentences have led to the state's prison population to become older, providing more costly and less impactful public safety, and they would not have as great impacts on public safety. There's also an opportunity here to engage in true restorative justice. True restorative justice, which would allow and be victim-centered and allow the victims to talk about healing, something that, frankly, our current justice system is not good at. I think that there is opportunity here for both victims and offenders to hold to the concept that people are capable of changing and to reconcile ourselves with what we've done.
Yeah. Restorative justice. You have the most activist judge in the state, who they make time for her to testify, of course, on the bill that will give judges like her discretion to end people's sentences and put them back in society. And she has all the buzzwords that the left loves, restorative justice, we'll be victim-centered, as if any single thing she's ever done has been victim-centered. Think about it. This judge that testified, wanting more discretion, let's go through her greatest hits, shall we? Let's see, attacker who fractured El Corazon singer's skull out of jail. Yeah, released by Judge Veronica Galvin. Didn't matter that, you know, random attack, fractured someone's skull. Oh, you're fine. You just go home and get your little ankle monitor on, whatever it is. Judge releases 12-year-old accused of using ghost gun in Seattle carjacking. That was also Judge Veronica Galvin, because it's just a 12-year-old. Oh, he's just having fun. You know, ghost gun, carjacking, kids will be kids, no big deal. Teens arrested with modified guns at Chinatown Seafair Parade, released to home monitoring. Yes, as if in any other place in the country, if somebody showed up with modified guns that were modified to be automatic to a parade, that person wouldn't be looking at like 50 years in prison. But no, these are teens. And in the eyes of Judge Veronica Galvin, teens are just kids, and even if they commit very serious crimes, even if they put lives in danger, she's always going to take it easy on kids. Now, I will say, thank God, because you're watching this, and you're like, she's testifying in favor of this bill, but she is the literal reason this bill shouldn't exist. She is the chief argument, her and a few other real bad judges, the chief argument against House Bill 1125, against giving judges discretion to end lengthy sentences. And thank God, I have to give credit to Democratic State Representative Lauren Davis. She represents the Shoreline area. So she sits on this committee. And I was shocked as this was happening. I said, is she really going to do this? This is a Democrat who realizes how ridiculous it is that Judge Galvin is the one before their committee advocating that it would be perfectly fine, nothing would go wrong if you give judges like her more discretion. Here's Representative Davis.
I take my job on this committee very seriously, and as our name suggests, our primary objective is community safety. So I'll preface this by saying I mean this with all due respect, and this is a very sincere question for you as I'm struggling with how to vote or how to amend this legislation. So the bill before us is titled the Judicial Discretion Act, and you are here testifying, asking us to grant judges more discretion. But within your current discretion, you released one defendant who then shot and killed a 15-year-old boy, and another defendant who 2 weeks later tied a 14-year-old boy to a tree and disemboweled him. That was in December. So if I vote for this policy, some of these incarcerated individuals are released and then they do reoffend, I consider myself culpable. And so my question
yes,
to you
girl.
Is how can I have confidence in granting more discretion to judicial officers when I already have concerns about the ability of some judges to assess dangerousness and prioritize public safety?
Great Thank question.
I will say this. I can't speak as to specific cases that are pending before me because of ethics rules. But I will tell you that each and every single judge takes each and every single decision seriously. I've been a judge for 23 years. I'm not going to be perfect. None of us is going to be. We do our best to try to look at our crystal ball and say, is this person somebody who might have a shot if they're given supports and opportunities? Sometimes that works. Actually, And the majority of times that works if you're only quoting two cases in my 23 years of judicial performance. I've made thousands upon thousands upon thousands of decisions every single day. And every single one of those I take extraordinarily seriously, as do every single one of my colleagues. Now, if you expect perfection in every single decision, or us to be able to say, this is the person who's going to do it, or this is the person who's not going to do it, I understand. I also don't get asked about that one person that I kept in that 6 years later was found not guilty for murder. Nobody tells me about that person that I held and later was determined to be not guilty. And that's happened as well. I've had also people that everybody's insisted should not be released, who've gone on to do extraordinary things. Those things don't make the news, because those things don't give people fear. Those things don't allow people to react on their base instincts. Those things don't allow people to think critically and in a nuanced manner about what we're trying to do as a society.
Yeah, it's us. Our instincts are just taking over. Like, oh, I can't be perfect. You can't expect perfection. So one kid gets hung from a tree and disemboweled. What do you expect from me? And she acts as if Lauren Davis gave her the only two possible examples. No, we just read three. There are multiple examples over a very short period of time of Judge Veronica Galvin's misconduct, and that's what I would call it, of her poor judgment. If she wants us to go back through the 20 or so odd years she's been on the bench, I'm sure we can find hundreds. Because if we can find that many in the course of a year, and she wants to say, well, I'm not going to be perfect. You're far from perfect. You are an example of the thing that is wrong with our criminal justice system, because you prioritize criminals over the law abiding. And you are a perfect example of why House Bill 1125 cannot be allowed to pass. And even a Democrat on that committee saw that. It's unreal to me. And again, the House Public Safety Committee has just become a committee focused on making the state less safe. We've had so many examples of it. I challenged Roger Goodman when he was on this show last week to give me one example of something the Public Safety Committee was doing that would actually make life more difficult for criminals or that would improve public safety. And he got into this thing about we're going to try to improve safety at like bus stops and stuff. I said, you mean by taking away our right to bear arms around public transit to protect ourselves? And he's sort of like, well, you know, acknowledging they're very dangerous places to be, but that they've made it nearly impossible. You can't have a gun. You can't have a knife. You can't have anything to try to defend yourself against some of these violent attacks that have happened on trains, at bus stops. It's because they don't want you to be safe. It's the only explanation for any of this. Let's continue with a couple things in Olympia. And I'll take a little break, I think, from the Olympic coverage, and I'll come back to it in a later segment. Because or else I might get myself spun up and I won't be able to unspin. All right, so this one, again, authoritarianism. They want to control every aspect of your lives. They want you to live your life exactly as they see fit, in big ways and in small ways. So remember what one of the biggest fights we undertook of the past year was? Trying to stop a ban on natural gas in your homes and businesses. Because last legislative session, they passed a bill that essentially was the roadmap for PSE, Puget Sound Energy, to be able to stop serving natural gas customers. Which, there's so many things that are problematic about that. There's no reason for it. There's no rationale for it. It also screws people over when we have a major storm and we have an electrical grid that is a mess. And an electrical grid that absolutely could not handle natural gas users having to switch over. So what did Let's Go Washington do? Well, Let's Go Washington ran an initiative. They gathered 500,000 signatures in a month and a half. They put the initiative on the ballot to protect natural gas. It's the only initiative that passed in November, where citizens across the state said, we want to be able to use natural gas in our homes and in our businesses. And then what happened? Local governments, the city of Seattle, King County, the state of Washington, environmental groups, now they're suing to overturn the will of the people. We know what's best for you. We want you using electricity. We don't want you using natural gas. So they're pushing that, trying to overturn the will of the people. And now they have their eyes set on wood-burning stoves. They're all in on this electricity thing. So we don't want you to use natural gas. We don't want you to use the oldest form of heating your home, burning some wood in a wood-burning stove. This stuff's insane. So Senate Bill 5174, it would, I mean, again, think about why is this something they're focused on? Why are they so obsessed with coming into your home and telling you the acceptable ways to stay warm? So it says any person in a residence or commercial establishment which has an adequate source of heat without burning wood shall not burn wood in any wood-burning device whenever the department has determined that any air pollution episode exists in that area. And you cannot burn wood in any wood-burning device except those which are certified by the department. So they want to, first of all, they want to start to make it unlawful to sell wood-burning stoves. So they want to interfere in private enterprise. If they find that any air pollution episode exists in your area, you are not to use your wood-burning stove. And the only wood-burning stove you can use, if that's your only source of heat, is one that is certified by the government, as if they're going to certify any of them. That's the key. They'll just certify none of them. And it's the government that gets to decide whether air pollution is to the point where you can or cannot use your wood-burning stove. The government really wants to come into your home and tell you that you can't put a log on your fireplace and warm your feet by the fire. So they're fighting natural gas. They want to ban natural gas. They want to ban wood-burning stoves. And they want you to use electricity. Wood-burning stoves, what's the problem they have with wood-burning stoves? It doesn't take a rocket scientist. It's not that it's environmentally unfriendly. They can't make any money off of it. They can't make any money off of you going into the woods, cutting down a tree, making firewood. My husband's dad, he heats his home. He lives in a pretty remote area. He heats his home exclusively on a wood-burning stove. They can't make any money off that, though. Their friends at PSE can't make any money off that. That's what it's about. It's about control and money. And they have no shame. And also, I'd say, my first question was, well, how are they going to enforce that? Are they going to come into my home and see if I'm burning wood to stay warm? Like, how are they really going to enforce that? Are they going to look at chimneys across the skyline and be like, who's burning wood today? Like, go get them. But then, like I said, they want to try to eventually stop the sale of wood-burning stoves. And then, God forbid you have a wood-burning stove that the government hasn't approved, then they would go after companies that repair wood-burning stoves, and they would say, well, sorry, I can't repair your wood-burning stove because it's not the type of stove that's approved by the government. So once the wood-burning stove you have no longer works, then you're kind of screwed, and then you're going to be forced to move over to something else. Whether you can afford it or not, they're not going to help you with that. Authoritarians. It's insane. I want to go to one more and I'll take a break from the legislature and cover some other things really quickly, but I got to come back to it because there's one doozy of a bill that I'm going to spend a lot of time on today. So a lot of firearm related bills happening in Olympia. No fewer than a dozen. And they're all, of course, aimed at making life more difficult for law-abiding gun owners and for making it nearly impossible to have a business where you sell guns. They want to make it cost prohibitive. They want to make it cost prohibitive to own a gun. They want to make it cost prohibitive to sell a gun. That's their end route around the Second Amendment. Oh, we can't do away with the Second Amendment, but we can make it cost prohibitive to exercise your Second Amendment rights. And then meanwhile, like we talked last week, House Bill 1178, where they are simultaneously trying to reduce punishments for criminals who actually use guns to hurt other people. Yeah, that's going on. But law-abiding gun owners, God forbid you want to own a gun per the Second Amendment and use it to hurt no one at all. Unless they try to hurt you first, of course. So now I share with you House Bill 1504, maybe the craziest of all the gun control bills. So House Bill 1504 has to do with, and I love that they couch it like this. They say it's an act relating to enhancing public safety. Of course, because they care so much about public safety. So this isn't about screwing over law-abiding gun owners and hating the Second Amendment. This is about enhancing public safety by requiring financial liability, financial responsibility to purchase or possess a firearm. I'll read from House Bill 1504 for you. A firearm liability policy or bond under this section, it requires you to get insurance if you own a firearm. It says a firearm liability policy or bond under this section must be issued by an insurance company or surety company authorized to do business in the state, provide at least $25,000 of coverage per incident arising from accidental or unintentional discharge of the covered firearm causing injury, death, or property damage, and identify the specific firearm covered by the policy or bond, which is, of course, they want a list of all the firearms you have in your home. That's part of this. But they want you just to have a firearm, to own a firearm, all the other steps they're going to put you through, you also have to have a liability insurance policy. And at the same time, they're trying to reduce the punishments for criminals who use guns to actually hurt people. But you, law-abiding gun owner, you have to pay for a liability insurance policy for having a firearm. Even if the only thing you ever do with that firearm is take it to the range or go hunting with it. I mean, they hate law-abiding gun owners. They hate the Second Amendment. They love criminals who use guns. That's totally cool. Biggest fans of that. But they're trying to make it cost prohibitive to own a firearm. And you know what? They probably know. Maybe there's not even a company that's going to be able to do that. Or maybe they know the insurance prices will be so, so high to get coverage for that, that people will be like, well, I guess I can't own a gun. It's the same thing they did to firearm shops last session, where they passed this laundry list of cost prohibitive, security measures and other compliance measures that you had to undergo if you run a firearm shop, like amping up security, the kinds of doors and windows you had to have, the kinds of video surveillance you had to have, where those video surveillance had to be, cameras had to be posted inside your business, how long and how many hours of video footage that you had to keep on file, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Hundreds of thousands of dollars in cost to a firearm shop because they want to just make every firearm shop close down. So their goal is to put so many regulations on people who are exercising their Second Amendment right that they just financially, they have the will to keep pushing, but financially they don't have the means. And that's the goal, which I would also say, the gun owners who will be impacted most by that are the poor and people who live in the most crime-ridden areas who want to protect themselves. And it would also disproportionately impact, what is it, buzzword, communities of color. So they're going to take away the ability of poor people to protect themselves from criminals. The criminals are fine. They can continue to use guns and then their sentences are going to be less and less. So all that's good. So for as much as they want to stand up for the low income and people of color, they're, through this, going to make them less safe because they're not going to be able to protect themselves, their families, or their home. Just insane. All right, coming up next, I'll take a brief break from legislative news because I want to play a clip from you from our Sunday show, which was just fantastic. First, if you're thinking about selling your home in 2025, reach out to our friend Wes Jones at sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com. Wes and his team have an innovative marketing strategy to make sure the most possible eyeballs get on your listing and that it absolutely stands out on the market. The first thing I would recommend doing is going to the website, plugging in your address, and using their home value calculator just to see how much your home is worth. It's totally free. It might be worth more than you think. And then Wes can give you a market analysis, which just sort of helps you understand how well your home is positioned, some of the comparables, what you can expect, and if you need to make some cosmetic upgrades to your home, which a lot of buyers expect these days, he can help you with that too. It's called their Listing Boost Concierge Service. He can manage those projects. He can even help you pay for it up front. So sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com, a better way to sell your home. All right, we had a special episode of Sundays with Subscribers yesterday where we spoke with a man named John Cameron. John Cameron is from Port Orchard, and he has the unfortunate label of being a J6er. So John went to, in fact, the first political event he ever attended in his life was the Stop the Steal rally in Washington, D.C. on January 6th, 2021. Imagine that. Very first political rally you're ever involved in. And he did end up entering the U.S. Capitol that day. He didn't commit any acts of violence. He claimed he never saw acts of violence in the door that he went in. So he, for the crime, which would eventually be identified as unlawful picketing in the U.S. Capitol, he faced federal charges. He eventually pled guilty to picketing. He had to live in a halfway house for 30 days. He lost his marriage of nearly 20 years. Wife was being ostracized by people in her life. She just couldn't deal with it anymore. His father and stepfather no longer talked to him. In fact, it was his father's stepson who turned him in. Lost his business, completely went under. His name was everywhere, couldn't get business, couldn't get leads, was left financially destitute, and was left kind of a societal pariah. All for the crime of, and again, you know, I've said that for J6ers, I feel a certain way if you assaulted a police officer. That's not what John Cameron did. Yet he really felt like the full weight and investigatory power of the federal government was levied against him for the simple act of entering the U.S. Capitol and not hurting anybody. So John, he gave us his first interview after getting a pardon last week from President Donald Trump. He is now a pardoned J6er. It's an hour and a half. I highly recommend watching it, but I wanted to play just a clip of it for you today. Is there anything the pardon does for you? Do you care about the pardon?
The biggest thing the pardon did was get the rest of the J6ers out of prison. Mm. There were no one got a fair trial. So we have there's a do-over portion of this, mm-hmm. right? So you couldn't sift through who, you know, legitimately assaulted a police officer when there were 500 who were in there for assault because they blocked. I will just say this because I know they blocked a cop's fist with their face and they were charged with assault. They stopped the baton from beating the girl next to him. They were charged with obstruction and assault and sent to prison for years.
Yep, though, in videos I've seen, there are people who assaulted police officers there. I've no doubt in my mind. I'm a firm mm-hmm. supporter of law enforcement. So is it worth it then that those people get to ride this pardon in order to get the other ones out expeditiously?
So like I said, I went to the Blackstone ratio. Yeah. Like I kind of was like, I was the same way. I was like, we really need to look at case by case because what if?
Yeah.
And then you can't. You have to. It's there was too many, too much. And what will come out of some of the violence, the real violence that I'll just say this. Did you hear the story about the J6er who firebombed the cop car and destroyed them?
Well, no.
And them and their accomplice got 6 months in prison and probation.
I didn't, because I'm assuming that wasn't a J6er. It was probably Antifa.
It was BLM. Yeah. Right? Because if it was a J6er, they would have gone to prison for a million years.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that's what I've said, is the hypocrisy is astounding.
Yeah. So that is a part of why everybody has to be free. Right.
I'll just ask you two more things. Yeah. What would your message be to Donald Trump if you had a chance to meet with him?
He has one of my letters. So I was part of a J6 coalition that, you know, sent him letters. Mm-hmm. That is a good question. First, I would thank him, right? I would thank him for his undying service to the country and almost being killed and still moving forward. That's what I would say most, because that fighter is a heart and it should inspire the rest of us to take action and move forward in the face of adversity. That's the biggest one. Since we're wrapping up, I want to talk about that political nature of what now I have learned in coming out the other side, mm-hmm. right? So going from a naive, new conservative who is like, I need to take action and do something. you and I met at a local GOP.
Yeah.
I was the state committee man of that GOP, and I believe I am the only J6er who had ever attained the rank in a county of state committee men.
Mm-hmm.
And that means I was one of three people in a county who brought their voice to the state. But I did that because I came out of J6 and it was time to do something again. There's no J6. So what do I do?
Yeah.
That same feeling that I talk about, that battle I had within myself of good versus evil, that it caused me to need to take action. Had there been somebody like me to put their arm around and go, hey, if you're feeling like you need to take action, all you really need to do is go wave a banner for this candidate, make some phone calls or door knock, and it will give you the action items that you need to solve that inner rumbling. You'll be able to sleep the sleep of truth. And I would have gone, I wouldn't have needed to go, because I would have had a platform and an outlet for this need. So what I did that for the last 2 years was recruit patriots to my local GOP, and a J6er is easily able to do that, because I'll say, come with me and we will fight for all these things that we want, and I will fight as hard for you as I did for election integrity and First Amendment rights on January 6th that sent me to prison. And I'm not joking, and this is a real fight, but come on, we can do it together. And you also have that, like your path, right?
Yeah.
As a journalist is fraught with obstacles and angst and hate and, right? But you're bringing the truth, because the truth is more important to you than all these negative things. And in the end, it wins out. And that path is not that one of least resistance, right? But it's that same sort of path that has caused you to go, okay, you're doing your best for conservatism, mm-hmm. for bringing the truth forward, and, you know, going from mainstream media to an independent journalist, you know, huge change of scary, what's going to happen, and there's more to come. I believe there's even more greatness for you, because that voice, that independent decentralization of media voice, yeah. right now, you probably know by viewers and readerships, is becoming more and more important, because the corporate media is becoming less and less important.
Yeah. You kind of almost brought me to my last question. It's a silly question, because it's a total hypothetical. But you mentioned, had you been engaged in these other ways, you know, you might not even have gone to mm-hmm. DC. If you could go back, knowing what you know today and what it would cost you, would you still do what you did?
It's a good question. I used to say no. Mm-hmm. Okay. I used to say no.
Which, like, would be an understandable answer.
Yeah, I used to say no if it meant not losing my family, not going to prison, not losing my business, all of that. If I knew what I knew now, that the full might and power of the government would come to bear on one little American like me to run me into the ground, to destroy my finances, my family, to destroy everything, I wouldn't have done it. Now, I may be changing my mind with the pardon. The pardon might have made me change my mind on that. I may have, my marriage may have ended regardless, right?
Mm.
I think it's at this point more important to bring the truth and to do what I think is right in the face of adversity. But now I'm pardoned, so I've even thought of that. It has yeah. begun to change my mind.
So that's my conversation with John Cameron, who is now a pardoned J6er from Washington State, one of roughly 30 J6ers from our state who received a pardon from President Donald Trump. You know, it was a 90-minute conversation, really interesting. I mean, he's very thoughtful, obviously. And you know, my opinion on the J6 pardons is nuanced. As I told him there are absolutely people who assaulted police officers. Now, I think everyone should get a fair trial. Everyone's constitutional rights should be respected. And I think that's part of the reason why it was a blanket pardon, because it's like, how long is it going to take for each of those individual cases to be reviewed and for that determination to be made? But I never want to water down some of the things that happened on January 6th, because I wouldn't want them watered down when it's Antifa in Seattle, or when it's the pro-Hamas people terrorizing campuses, or whatever it is. We have to come to this morally correct place. But there's no doubt in my mind. I mean, all the things that John Cameron lost in his life for the crime of, during his first political outing ever, entering the U.S. Capitol, not hurting anyone, not breaking anything, you know, to be sent by a federal judge to a halfway house, to lose his marriage of 20 years, to lose his business, to lose friends, to lose other family members who'll never speak to him, who called him a white supremacist online, All these things, ask yourself, is that justice? Is that commensurate with the crime that he committed that day? And I think a reasonable person has to say no. You can watch that entire interview with John Cameron by becoming an Undivided subscriber. It's up now. You can go to undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com, and click on support the show, and that'll open up access to all those Sunday episodes for you. All right. I had to compose myself before getting to this next story, because it really is the definition of authoritarianism. We have warned anyone who will listen about the dangerous path this state is on by voters. And it's the fault of voters. Make no mistake, voters, these lawmakers don't go to Olympia and just on their own accord without somebody sending them there. These are decisions that voters make in a democracy. And so waking up those voters to the danger of continuing to strengthen the Democratic majority in Olympia is incredibly important. And maybe I've been waiting for what will it be that tips the scales so people realize, look, they're out for themselves and their party, not for us. Maybe it will be the decision in the House of Democrats to repeal a 132-year-old rule that allowed the minority party to advocate on behalf of its constituents. This segment is brought to you in partnership with our friends at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org and make sure you sign up for their newsletter for opportunities to do just that. So here's what happened. This is from our friends at the Center Square. Washington House Dems change 132-year-old rule requiring supermajority to end debates. Here's how they explain what happened. For 132 years, a rule has existed in the Washington State Legislature's House of Representatives requiring a supermajority to suspend debate on a bill that has come to the floor. Last week, House legislators voted 54-33 to alter that rule so that now only a majority is required to end debate. Now, why make that change? Well, it's because Democrats don't have a supermajority yet. They do have a majority, though, a pretty strong majority. And so now when there is debate happening for the last 132 years, when there's debate happening and somehow we've managed to get by with this just fine, when there's debate happening on a bill, when lawmakers from across the state that represent different areas, different counties, different cities want to stand up and share how that bill might impact their constituents, they were allowed to do so. But according to the Democratic majority, that's just a waste of time. They want to now, after 132 years, be able to end debate on a bill whenever they see fit. Here's Democratic Representative Joe Fitzgibbon.
Endless debates are not in the interests of the people that those legislatures represent. It's also the case in the U.S. House of Representatives that endless debate is not allowed. They're able to move expeditiously towards a vote, but still have very robust debates on the issues before that body.
It's not in the interest. It is not in your best interest for there to be, in the eyes of the Democratic Party, endless debates on the House floor. We can't do that. We can only listen to so much from the minority party. We can only listen to so much criticism of our bills that we're trying to push through. Endless debate doesn't serve anyone. Except the House rule for the last 132 years hasn't allowed for endless debate. In fact, as Representative Drew Stokesbury, who's the ranking Republican in the House, pointed out very eloquently on the floor, there are a lot of rules that already, prior to this for 132 years, prevented the minority party from just rambling on endlessly.
This is supposed to be the people's house. That means all people. That includes members of the majority and the minority. Unlike other chambers, members can't hold the floor for hours on end. We can speak for up to 3 minutes before cutoff. Unlike other chambers, members can't read the phone book. We can't read Charles Dickens. We have 3 minutes to speak to the topic of the bill or amendment before us. And this right to speech does not allow members to stop any of the things that the majority have the right to do. Under this new rule, there's no longer a guarantee that members would have the right to articulate their dissent. It wouldn't matter if they've not yet spoken on a measure or if they wanted to speak about the bill. The right to speak on this floor at all, if this resolution is adopted, would be subject to the whims and fancy of a bare majority. That's chilling, Madam Speaker, and it's sad. This rule change would mean that for 3 million Washingtonians that are represented by people on my side of the aisle, their elected representative may only speak on the floor of the House upon the sufferance of other members. That's not fair, Madam Speaker. That's not right. This is supposed to be the people's House. That means all people. That includes members of the majority and the minority. This rule change puts the convenience of the majority ahead of the rights of the minority. Today's a sad day for the institution, Madam Speaker, a chilling day for the 3 million Washingtonians whose elected voices can now be silenced at any time. I urge you to put this resolution down, to bring up a new rules package that respects dissenting views, respects all Washingtonians, and reflects this chamber's position as the people's house, not the house of certain people. Vote no.
And his logic there can't be argued with. Joe Fitzgibbon and Democrats want to say, well, look, you know, we can't just have endless debate happening on the House floor. We have a lot of business to attend to. And so, you know, we can't have every Republican who wants to stand up and just speak endlessly. They can't do that anyway. There's a time limit that each member has. They're not allowed to filibuster. They're not allowed to eat up time by standing up and talking about something completely unrelated to the bill. But yes, as the rules for the last 132 years have allowed for, if every member on the minority side, which isn't very many, it's not like it's the House of Representatives where you've got a 400-something person body. If every member wants to stand up and take their 3 minutes on a consequential bill and share, here's how this would impact the people in my district, the people I was sent here to represent. The Democratic Party does not want to allow them to do that. 3 million people, as Drew Stokesbury pointed out. The Democrats, or the Republicans in Olympia, represent, and their districts represent 3 million people in Washington. Yes, that's a minority, but 3 million people is still a lot of people. Of the 8 million people who call this state home. And what the Democrats can now do for the first time in 132 years is they can end debate and discussion on the floor. They can silence the representatives of those 3 million people and push through their bills without even having to hear dissent. They don't even want it to touch their ears. We've talked about all the ways that the Democratic Party has been consolidating power and then crushing dissent. They've crushed the referendum process. They've rendered it completely useless because they don't want any citizens running a referendum on any of their bills because they can do nothing wrong. They have tried and are continuing to try this session to crush the initiative process, which is one of the last remaining ways that we have to push back against the party in power. They have a bill this session that will make collecting signatures for initiatives nearly impossible. Burdensome, prohibitive. Because they don't want to hear any dissent. They don't want anyone to push back against what they're doing. It's not even, again, with 132 years, they might have had to sit there last session and listen to Republicans tell them why their bills are bad. Tell them why their bills are dangerous. Tell them why their bills shouldn't be passed. But they could still turn around and can today pass them. But what they're saying is they don't even want to sit through. They don't even want to sit through any debate, discussion, dissent on their ideas. They're turning the House chamber into an echo chamber in every sense of the word. And they said during this debate, well, we'll only use it. Don't worry. I mean, we're going to let you talk about bills. We're only going to use it if your members are just standing up and saying the same thing over and over and over. Do you believe that? Do you believe that? Do you believe the only time they're going to use this is if Republicans are just standing up and saying the same thing over and over and just wasting time? No. The reason they're doing this is because they can. Is because they can. And if they are presented with an opportunity to consolidate power and to squash dissent, they've shown us they will take advantage of every single one of those opportunities. It's not enough to be in the majority. It's not enough to have the numbers to push through and pass any bill they desire. They have to do so without ever having a negative word about their policies touch their ears. It's one of the most disgusting and dangerous abuses of power I have seen in Olympia in 15 years. Maybe ever, but that's as far back as my knowledge of what they've done goes. It's really scary stuff. 123 years of precedent. Gone just like that. That segment was brought to you in partnership with our friends at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. Make sure you sign up for their newsletter to be alerted to opportunities to do just that. And I'm sure Future 42 has a lot to say about what just happened in Olympia. Okay, we'll get to some national news coming up next. First, I've encouraged you to take the First Mark Challenge. It's such a no-brainer. Hell, if they require you to get firearm insurance, First Mark might have to help you with that too. But First Mark, the challenge is free, totally free. You never pay First Mark anything for their services. And what it entails is just scheduling a little time to talk to them, go over your current insurance, talk about your insurance needs. They go out, they shop the market for you and come back with their recommendations. And we hear endless stories of people, Undivided viewers and listeners, who've saved thousands of dollars a year with First Mark. And the consistent theme is, why did I not call them sooner? We always hear that. Spencer says they saved him $1,600 a year. Chad says they saved him $100 a month, so around $1,200 a year. Says, truly love the customer service I got. And again, you never pay First Mark anything, and you have to have insurance regardless. So why not do it through a local company that's been doing this a long time that always has your best interests in mind? First Mark Insurance, the very, very best part is they work for you, not the insurance company. So they're going to look out for you. All right, some national news here. Did you, this whole Columbia, Donald Trump, flight, deportation flights, things was nuts. So just to kind of like set this up for you, you know, for the last like 4 years, all we've seen are all these videos of like illegals coming across the southern border. No effort to stop them or being flown into the United States, you know, being bussed around the country, like total open doors, open border. And so it's been interesting and very strategic, I think, for the Trump administration to do the exact opposite. They're taking pictures, they're taking videos, they're blasting them all over of immigrants, you know, getting into the back of a military plane, shackled up, because they want to show that dichotomy between what was happening before and what's happening now. And part of that is to send a message to people who would try to enter the United States illegally and to other nations that we're not tolerating it anymore. It's a zero tolerance, and we're going to send you back from where you came. To where you came. So Donald Trump, he's sending these flights back to various countries, right? They had two flights that were inbound to Colombia with Colombian nationals. Colombia had already agreed to take these flights. But once the flight was in the air, Colombia took that approval away and wouldn't allow those flights to land. So Donald Trump, he, later to find out, which we'll talk about in a moment, he's golfing during all of this. Like just owning other countries while golfing. You gotta love it. I won't read this whole thing, but he basically said, I was just informed that two flights from the United States with a large number of illegal criminals were not allowed to land in Colombia. And he says, so here's what's going to happen. Emergency 25% tariffs on all goods coming into the U.S. from Colombia. That'll last for 1 week, and then we'll raise the tariffs to 50%. A travel ban and immediate visa revocations on the Colombian government officials and all allies and supporters. Visa sanctions on all party members, family members, and supporters of the Colombian government. Enhanced customs and border protection inspections of all Colombian nationals, et cetera, et cetera. So he's basically like, this is going to get bad for you really quick. It took like minutes for Colombia to be like, okay, never mind. And for the president of Colombia to come out and say, you can use my presidential plane. And he was saying, well, we didn't have a problem with the flights. We wanted these to be a dignified transfer. And so he's making it seem now like they had an issue with these images of Colombian nationals being all shackled on military planes. And so he wants them coming in a dignified way on his presidential airplane. The U.S. doesn't care how they go. They just want them there. And so it was fascinating how he just folded like a cheap suit. The press secretary put out a statement, again, just a short time after all of this came out. The government of Colombia has agreed to all of President Trump's terms, including the unrestricted acceptance of all illegal aliens from Colombia returned from the United States, including on U.S. military aircraft, without any limitation or delay. And they said as far as those potential sanctions go, they're going to table them. They're just going to shelve them, waiting for a signature from Donald Trump in the event that Colombia doesn't keep its word. And then Donald Trump got on Truth Social and he posted this this AI image of him dressed like a gangster, and it said F-A-F-L, F around and find out. They found out real quick. And yeah, it turns out he was like on the golf course while all of this was going down. So just entertaining. I mean, that is what you call like peace through strength. And the strength that you display, and again, that was all very clearly prearranged in terms of they had already decided what the consequences would be for nations that did not take these flights, because they had that ready to go in a second with it all drawn up. And that's how you carry something like that out. They knew that there might be nations that, of course, you think Colombia wants all the violent criminals that were here? They're probably like, oh, they're your problem now. So, of course, you think these nations want to take their violent criminals back? Of course not. The Trump administration anticipated that. They had their plan of action ready the moment that Colombia said those flights cannot land. And that is the strength that matters. And that's the strength that President Donald Trump has shown in the last week. All right, let's see. Oh, I do have to play this. This is just great. There's so many good clips out that I was like, oh, it's just too much. So did you see, first of all, hi, Nicole, did you know Dr. Phil had his own news channel?
Well,
he's got his own thing.
I don't know if I knew he had his own news channel, but I knew that he'd been talking with Trump and yeah. He was on the Trump team now.
Yeah, I don't remember what it's called, but he's got his own little thing. So Dr. Phil, it's just, what world are we living in? He goes out with Tom Homan, the head of all these efforts for the Trump administration, while they're in Chicago rounding up criminal, illegal immigrants. And he had, so it's all just, it's almost like a TV show. Essentially, mm-hmm. At this point, we want to show what we're doing. So here's an exchange between Dr. Phil and a criminal, illegal alien who, of course, knows who Dr. Phil is. You can imagine this was a weird day for him. Here it is.
What's your name?
Seda.
Seda what? You have a person on that team.
Sarah.
Seda-san?
Yes.
Where are you from?
Where I was born or where I'm from?
Where are you born?
Thailand.
You've been deported before from the United States?
No.
Never been deported?
But I've been in the system before.
Yeah?
Yeah.
What have you been charged with?
Charged with?
Before.
I'm not gonna say that. I'm gonna talk to my lawyer.
I don't want to say.
Well, this is an example of sanctuary cities, right? We got an illegal alien convicted of sex crimes involving children, and he's walking the streets of Chicago. Again, the downfall, the problem with a sanctuary city, that people like us walking the street rather than local law enforcement working with federal agents, this is what we're dealing with.
Yeah. You've been charged with sex crimes with children?
Not really.
Not really? And never been deported?
Nope.
Huh.
You've been charged with sex... Not really. What does not really mean? Yeah, so it's an example. Again, he's been convicted of sex crimes. He's here illegally. He's from Thailand originally, and he was never deported. Why? Because of sanctuary policies. Because you're treated just like any other person in the United States who might find themselves in the criminal justice system. They don't treat you any different in a sanctuary policy, and that's by... in a sanctuary state or city, and that's by design. It's a merit TV, is Dr. Phil's new venture. All right, so there was a lot of good clips. I just had to play a couple of them. So J.D. Vance, who's been doing phenomenal. I was very skeptical of him, as you know, as a vice presidential pick. I think he's proving me wrong and a lot of people wrong. He was on with, was it Margaret Brennan? Yeah, Margaret Brennan. And it was so fascinating to watch. She's usually pretty, even calm. She was clearly just absolutely dead set on all these Democratic talking points about immigration. And J.D. Vance absolutely took her for a walk.
When you talked to us in August, you said, I don't think we should abandon anybody who's been properly vetted and helped us. Do you stand by that?
Well, Margaret, I don't agree that all these immigrants or all these refugees have been properly vetted. In fact, we know that there are cases of people who allegedly were properly vetted and then were literally planning terrorist attacks on our country. That happened during the campaign, if you may remember. So clearly not all of these foreign nationals have been properly vetted.
No, but there are 30,000 people in the pipeline. Afghan refugees.
But my primary concern as the vice president, Margaret, is to look after the American people. And now that we know that we have vetting problems with a lot of these refugee programs, we absolutely cannot unleash thousands of unvetted people into our country.
These people
it's
are
not
vetted.
Good.
These people are vetted.
Just like the guy who planned a terrorist attack in Oklahoma, allegedly properly vetted, and many people in the media and the Democratic Party said that he was properly vetted. Clearly he wasn't.
Yeah.
I don't want my children to share a neighborhood with people who are not properly vetted. And because I don't want it for my kids, I'm not going to force any other American citizens' kids to do that either.
No, and that was a very particular case. It wasn't clear if he was radicalized when he got here or while he was living here.
I don't really care, Margaret. I don't want that person in my country. And I think most Americans agree with me.
I don't really care, Margaret, is the best line ever. But I love how he gives her an example, has an immediate retort, like, what about, you know, this? And she's like, well, that was a particular example. He's like, okay, so we just ignore it? It was really a masterclass in doing an interview with sort of a hostile media. You got to watch the whole thing if you haven't already. Really quick, I also want to play... So, you know, all the new IRS agents that they hired under the Biden administration, Donald Trump might have a job for them.
They hired or tried to hire 88,000 new workers to go after you. And we're in the process of developing a plan to either terminate all of them or maybe we'll move them to the border.
Do it. Do it.
I think we're going to move them to the border. Well, they're allowed to carry guns. You know, they're so strong on guns. But these people are allowed to carry guns, so we'll probably move them to the border.
Yeah, if they can hunt down tax cheats, then they can definitely hunt down illegal immigrants. I love that. I think that's a great. You know, keep them employed. Keep them employed, providing for their families, but they got to go down to the southern border. I skipped Unbelievable, didn't I? Since we're a little late anyway, will you just throw people a bone and just play it so we can just get it out of our system? Oh, we were going to talk about egg prices, but we're pretty late anyway, and so I'll talk about egg prices tomorrow, but just so nobody's like, I'll be like, okay, sorry, my bad.
Where's the boop?
Yeah, boop. All right, Zach Abraham and Buller Capital are having another one of their Know Your Risk Live webinars coming up this Thursday, and there's still time to register. It's totally free. Go to knowyourriskradio.com, knowyourriskradio.com, and they're going to go over a few things during the live webinar. They're going to talk about Donald Trump, his economic policy, what that might mean for your retirement portfolio. They're going to do a preview of what they expect in 2025 in the markets, et cetera, and overall in the economy. And then they're going to do a full reveal of how Bulwark is always looking for opportunities to lower risk, lower cost, give your retirement as much upside as possible. And that's what we all want. Your retirement is a huge thing. We all have our dreams for our retirement. We want to know and make sure that there's enough money there to fulfill those dreams. And it's always good just to get a second opinion. So even if you're happy with, you know, how your retirement, or you think you're happy with how your retirement portfolio is being managed, why not get a second opinion for free? So do two things. First, sign up for Zach's 2025 preview webinar. Again, this Thursday, register at knowyourriskradio.com. And then if you like what you hear, reach out to Zach and his team and see if they'll just go over your retirement portfolio and give you some thoughts. So knowyourriskradio.com, knowyourriskradio.com. Okay, let's get to our daily subscriber show poll really quick. Just because I'm curious on the wood-burning stove issue. Nicole, you don't have a wood-burning stove, do you? Hold on, I might have to sneeze.
My parents rely on it.
Yeah, like Mike's dad does. Mm-hmm. And so I know, because they always go over there and chop firewood and all that stuff. So I asked you guys, do you use a wood-burning stove? And I'll say, when I put that question out, I thought it was going to be like 5%.
Oh, really? No.
What do you think it is?
I would say 50. I'd say really? Close to 50.
Well, on Patreon, at least, it says 30%. So 30% said that they do use a wood-burning stove. So you'd be at the whims of the government. Oh, there's too much pollution in the air today. You must put that wood-burning stove out and just freeze to death. Pretty consistent across all our subscription platforms, about 30%. Randall says, if I had one in my house or could even take one, I definitely would. Real wood, not pellets, if given the choice. Grew up with one, and that's a great no-power heat and rudimentary cooking option, and just provides a pleasant heat. It does, and there's something about burning wood. There's something about, if I'm on a vacation or something, or I'm out relaxing at a cottage or something, I want to burn wood.
Okay.
Isn't it more? I
agree. I had this gas fireplace that wasn't real functional. It was an unvented one. They're not real functional. So I just had my dad come and replace it with a fake electric burning or electric little wood looking burning stove,
fake
like
wood.
A fake wood.
Yeah.
But
that's just the same.
But I wasn't, my HOA wouldn't allow me to replace it with wood burning, so I just kind of made do. But I love the look. I turn it on. First thing I do when I get home is turn on my little fake wood burning stove because it's such a comfort to have in the background. I don't know.
Well, it's like for all of human history, we've burned wood to keep warm.
And,
now Washington State Democrats
down.
Are like, no.
I know. Trees fall down. I mean, they're okay with burning, letting forests burn around here. So
that's burned wood.
That's burned wood.
Because you won't manage your forest.
Right, right.
Kayla says, and yes, I do. It offsets the cost of propane. We use the wood from our property from trees that you said, like you said, have fallen or have to be taken down for safety reasons. We also receive wood from family who own a tree business, and often customers don't want the wood from trees removed from their property. Yeah, and Mike and I have a little, just because we like sometimes to have fires in our backyard, although now the ability to do that is so limited. There's like this little period of time and the right conditions have to exist, which I get. We don't want to light anything on fire. But we have this this privately owned timberland you can get a pass to, and then you can get a couple cords of wood you can go out and harvest it on your own every year, and it's actually really reasonable.
Yeah.
So it's a big, Brenda says, yes, we live in an 800 square foot cabin in Lilawap on Highway 101 on the west side of the Hood Canal. Wava Java Junkie, I put no, but I have a vacation home in Ocean Shores that has three wood burning stoves in it. The power goes out often enough that we use it all the time. You know what's funny?
Mm-hmm.
I was literally in Ocean Shores this weekend for the Roanoke conference, and the power went out. In Ocean Shores, the power went out for the whole town during the conference on Sunday.
That's wild.
And it was freezing.
Was it windy? Was it because of
wind?
It
was not windy at all. I have no idea what happened, but that's so funny that you put that comment. I was just in Ocean Shores and the power went out.
Mm-hmm.
Let me see. Crystal says, 2 winters ago, our furnace went out. We didn't have the funds to replace it, but thankfully we had a wood stove. We actually have two. So while we don't use it all the time, when the power goes out like it tends to, I know we won't freeze. And right now they're saying, oh, if you have another heating source, then you know, you can't use a wood stove. But if that's the only heating source, obviously you can use it. But then again, they want to make sure that the one you use is approved and certified by the government. You really think that they're going to make it easy for you to keep that wood stove? It's just like the natural gas bill, where it's about moving away from it.
Mm-hmm.
Moving away from you having options. The whole human history,
control.
Burning wood was just fine. And now it's like, nope, can't do it because they can't make money off of it. They can't make money off you burning wood.
And they can't
God,
tell you.
These people
it's
are
another form of
jackasses.
They right. can make you miserable control. By the flip of a button.
Right. It's another form of control. But that's the thing is that we said with natural gas, like I joked, come and take it.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is, you just turn it off. You're just like, eh.
Yeah.
And so there's only so much resistance. But what are they going to do? They can't turn off my
every
wood,
single.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, are they going to monitor again the chimneys to see who's been send a task force
Apparently,
in?
Apparently, we had a listener say that that's what they did in Alaska. So they have new requirements in Alaska.
Yeah.
You can't have one that's over 10 years old or something. I don't know. But she said that they would send drones up looking for people.
Like, this is what the government is doing.
So, yeah.
Nicole, you're really funny today because your shirt, you look like you're a floating head.
Oh, I am a floating head.
Your shirt completely blends into the background.
Does.
It really does. Anyway, yeah, the government is, are they that bored? Are they that bored? I mean, they
power
want
hungry.
That much of a power hungry, I think is better.
Especially the ones in this state.
Yeah, they want that much control over your lives. You can only heat your home in the way they see fit. Just absolutely insane. So yeah, it sounds like actually that law would impact quite a few of you. I wasn't expecting it to be that large of a percentage. Okay, a lot of super chats today. You guys feeling particularly giving today? I love that.
Yeah.
If you, and by the way, speaking of giving, if you haven't subscribed to the show already, it never ceases to amaze me. The amount of people who come up, like this weekend I was at this political event, oh, I love your show, I've been listening for years, I haven't subscribed yet, but I'm like, why haven't you subscribed yet? It's $5 a month, undividedpod.com. Eric Bath, just $1.99, just for the hell of it, thank you. And then he says, the Department of Licensing already
reservedly?
The Department of Licensing already reservedly has an illegal registry of firearms purchases and owners. It needs to be deleted. Oh, that's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's interesting that the policy has to specifically list the insurance policy, all the firearms that are covered under the insurance policy. Baron of Gray Matter, Bob just said ICE arresting illegal criminals is legal, but against the values of Washington State. Really, it isn't against mine. I don't want violent people. Exactly. Eric, the Department of Light. Oh, that's other. Sorry. Woody 2.0, $5 super chat. So sad at Google and Patreon. My card was compromised. Been trying to get back on to support in 2 months. Oh my gosh, send us an email. I don't know. Your card was compromised. Got it. So you got to get the card back together. Well, we appreciate your support. Hopefully, you can be back with us soon.
Kathy, $4.99 super chat, just because. Appreciate it. Sergeant Buck, my parents have a wood-burning stove for the few times they lose power for more than a day. Why does the government assume outages can never happen? They don't care if outages happen.
Oh, yeah, they just don't care.
They just don't care. Mm-hmm. They just don't care. Greg says, thank you, Brandy, for keeping us up to date with all the bullshittery
going on in Olympia. I bleeped it for you, but then you went ahead and said it. You almost made it through a whole show.
Sorry. Going on in Olympia. Hope there's enough of us left here in this state to put a stop to it. Country guy, will gangbangers carry liability insurance? Great question. Somebody should testify in front of the committee and ask them. Mm-hmm. Do gangbangers have to carry liability insurance?
And are you going to tack on that penalty when you catch them?
Yeah, right. If there's that's a good question. If there's a law that says you have to have firearms insurance, liability insurance, then in theory, every criminal who commits a gun that isn't registered with liability insurance, that should be an additional charge, right? Do you think we'll ever see that? I don't think so.
Although they'll use it to bargain. That'll be what 100%. Goes.
Yeah, right? Yeah, we'll just get rid of it in a plea deal. Delaney, the fact that entering the people's house is even a crime is wild. Yeah, it's interesting with January 6th. I mean, there's a point to be made about that, about there's protests that happen in the Capitol all the time, whether it's the pro-Hamas stuff, BLM's been in the Capitol. And so why is it a crime to be picketing? So he had like a shirt on with a political message or whatever it was. And apparently that was part of the crime that he ended up pleading guilty to. But it's like, shouldn't you be able to peacefully picket? I'm not talking about generally. But I also made the argument to him that, look, individually, you could look at these individual acts on January 6th and say, you know, this is too heavy handed, or the response was. But if you look collectively, and I've been in a lot of riot type situations where afterwards, there's actually, and this might be unpopular to say, there's actually a lot of parity between some of the arguments John Cameron made and some of the arguments I hear from like Antifa about police being too heavy handed, or about, oh, they're pepper spraying a whole crowd and there's only a few violent people in the crowd. But my argument for that, having been in so many of those situations, is if you are truly a peaceful demonstrator in a crowd that's turned into a riot, you've made a decision to stay. Mm-hmm. If you don't want to be a part of it, you can leave.
Remove yourself.
But when you see, like, for instance, at CHOP, when it was these violent clashes, like every night, police line, protest line, people were throwing and hurling water bottles that had been frozen into ice at police. That's the moment where if you don't want to be part of something like that, you walk away. So I have very little sympathy when you're part of something and you get pepper sprayed and you knew that there were violent acts going on. Now, John says in the interview that he went through a different door, not that, you know, all the pictures are sort of the front of the Capitol and all that. He came out on a different side where he claims he didn't see illegal activity. So if his story is to be believed, and I thought he came across as very believable, when he was entering, he didn't see a real riot type environment. Mm-hmm. Now, there was a point where he thought people were getting out of control and where he took his leave and police had him go out a window.
Right.
And so I think that was one of his first things, like, why am I going out a window? Things are getting a little out of hand. But it's just, you know, first ever political event you go to. One of the other things that I encourage you, and we actually played it as part of that clip, is he said, had he felt like there were easy ways for him to get politically involved, or had he found some way to sort of express in a productive way his frustration with the system and all that, he never would have felt compelled to go to DC. Mm-hmm. But he had all these frustrations over what was happening in 2020, and that was sort of an outlet that was available to him, and so he just did it. Like, your first political rally, you end up being arrested by the FBI and, like, just crazy
stuff.
It
does kind of make you think about going, you know, you've said many times that you're not part of the Republican Party here.
Right.
And the Republican Party is quite a disaster right now in the state. But I think that that is kind of a, if that's somebody, I mean, you never agree 100% with someone, right?
Yeah.
But if that's the party that you identify most with, then maybe that is your outlet. You go to that party and you start being involved, and then maybe you can bring them to your side on some of the issues that you're not on their side with, or maybe that kind of balances the party in some way. Because right now it's the party of extreme. Really in this state, like all the people, I mean, you know, it's very polarizing, it feels like.
Well,
if you're
right.
An independent, or if you're just center right, you maybe don't feel as welcome.
Totally ostracized.
And so I think that they need more center right people, or you know, more independent minded people to join the party and say, hey, let's bring this party closer to what the majority of center right people feel,
or just get involved in individual issues. Anyone can go testify in Olympia. Mm-hmm. anyone, you don't have to testify as a Republican or as a Democrat.
It's really hard
anyone
can
testify.
Like it doesn't matter.
Well, yeah, I know they make it feel like it doesn't matter, yeah. But more people need to show up and make their mm-hmm. voices heard, like
absolutely.
Their voices of reality.
There
and
are
what's
some rallies coming
happening.
Up, and
so.
Those are things that people need to get involved with. Yeah. I mean, I've never been a part of a rally, and last year we did it, and I mean, it makes you see. This is what has to happen in order to get anyone's attention sometimes.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I think we'll probably be talking 100%. About some of the rallies that are coming up and how to get involved.
Yeah, 100%. Okay, good comments per the usual. I think we had one late super chat come in. E. Poindexter, bomb cyclone made the center of Redmond dark for 5 days. No generators for all those no gas apartments. Now this, Washington government is impossible. Yep. They just want to make life difficult for you. They want to collect money from you in any possible way they can. And they want, as Nicole said, control over you. That is fundamentally the issue. All right. And with that, let's get to our closing sanity check. Okay. I saw this video of Selena Gomez going around. Just had to play it. Selena Gomez in tears over President Donald Trump's immigration policy. And one of the things I'll say about this before I even play it. What is with that age group's obsession with, if you're crying, turning on your camera and recording it? I have never in my life, when I was in tears over something, felt compelled to immediately turn on my camera and tape it so other people could see me crying too. It's really weird, but here's Selena Gomez.
I just wanted to say that I'm so sorry. All my people are getting attacked. The children.
Children.
They don't understand. I'm so sorry. I wish I could do something, but I can't. I don't know what to do. I'll try everything I've.
Okay. Look, empathy is great. But when she says, all my people are being attacked, are your people criminal illegal aliens? Are your people the criminal illegal alien child molesters and murderers and rapists? Because that is predominantly the people who are being rounded up. So I don't think those are your people, Selena. I'm pretty sure they're not. And if they were out at schools, like we said, even our subscribers last week, very conservative, said they don't want ICE near schools, rounding up kids at schools, et cetera, et cetera. So we have empathy, too. But that's not what's happening right now. Tom Holman responded to Selena Gomez. Here's what he had to say.
I don't think we arrested any families. We've arrested public safety threats and national security threats, bottom line. And look, President Trump won the election on this one issue, securing our border and saving lives. This, what happened on our southern border last four is the biggest national security threat this country's seen, at least in my lifetime, because we got over 2 million known gotaways. We got a 600% increase in sex trafficking. We got a record number of terrorists crossing the border on the terrorist watch list. We have 250,000 Americans dying from fentanyl coming across the open border. We're going to do this job, and we're going to enforce the laws of this country. If they don't like it, then go to Congress and change the law. We're going to do this operational apology. We're going to make our community safer. We're going to save. Once we lock that border on continuous operation, you're going to see fentanyl deaths decrease, illegal alien crime decrease, sex trafficking decrease. It's just all for the good of this nation, and we're going to keep going. No apologies. We're moving forward.
And that's the same thing to say, and one of the points that he made there is very salient. Where were Selena Gomez's tears for the victims of sex trafficking in the cartel? Where are Selena Gomez's tears for the hundreds of thousands of Americans who've either become addicted to fentanyl, so addicted that they can't function in society, or who have died from fentanyl that was smuggled up through the southern border? Where are Selena Gomez's tears for the people who have been victimized, raped, killed by illegal immigrants? I haven't seen any tears for them, so forgive me if I don't feel bad about her tears. Now, that has been today's Sanity Check. That has been today's episode of Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. We appreciate every single one of you. Please sign up to support our show. It's how we continue to do this full time. What would you do for a part-time job if people don't subscribe, Nicole, and we both need part-time jobs? Let's just guilt them into subscribing for $5.
Yeah.
I guess I could. You know what I'll do?
McDonald's,
I'm
going to
get a part-time job as an IRS agent, and I'm going to track all of you down.
There you
I'm just kidding. JK, subscribe if you want to. It would be a nice thing to do. Undivided Pod McDonald's, though, you said. They're giving like $23 an hour at
McDonald's. I know, it's a good gig.
And if you got free
you get a lot of food.
Chicken McNuggets.
Fries.
Actually, you should do that
all
anyway.
About the fries.
See
I
about the
still
free
love
food
McDonald's
thing.
Fries.
Okay. UndividedPod.com. UndividedPod.com.